These words Merton uses in an introduction to a collection of Gandhi's writings on nonviolence, and they speak directly to my lived experience as a young cleric in a potlatch society. My sapiential eye and that of contemporary Western persons is occluded, closed, and distracted by technical processes and devices. The culture of technology, what I have chosen to call this bipolar structure of contemporary Euro-American experience, is the hyper-reality of those shaped by the video monitor, the rituals of consumption, the manipulations of text and hypertext, and the isolation of the mind from the complexity and reality of embodied interdependence. It is, excuse my making up of a word, it is a technostic mythos that has reduced the ethos, place, and community to an artifice, a scenario, and a packaged and packageable flow of information. The danger is that deficiencies in the model of this technological culture are taken as opportunities for its expansion into and therefore trivializing of all areas of human experience. Merton knows the worst thing that can happen to a person is who is already divided up into a dozen different compartments is to seal off yet another compartment and tell him or her that this one is more important than all the others. This was my dilemma, and is, I argue, the dilemma we face in this current dysfunctional phase of our culture, expressed equally in our theologies and in our patterns of life. Such was, and still is, my impulse to fix the disease, to manage the fool's dance, to tame the wolves, and find a better technique to bring salvation to the earth. The single-eyed giant of modernity, when confronted with the evidence of its own inadequacies, rather than coming down to earth and the dark realities of interdependence, develops yet more devices and self-help programs and bodybuilding techniques and extracurricular activities and software apps and programs and applications. The half-blind giant, like Abby Yo-Yo, if you know Pete Seeger's song, plays with its own shadow, fed to it by its own devices, dancing to an onanistic beat of a drum machine. Hopefully, like the fabled giant, it will fall to the ground, exhausted from its own self-obsessed and frantic capering, to make an identity and to leave a mark. The techniques, the plans, and the managed response of the one-eyed giant may lose their grip on us, and we might face flat on the earth, case our dependence on the gift, our vulnerability to the infinite order of interdependence. Again, my teacher, Merton, writes, "From what has been said, it is clear that there is and can be no special planned technique for discovering and awakening one's inner self, because the inner self is first of all a spontaneity that is nothing if not free. Therefore, there is no sense in starting with a definition, then deducing its essential properties, and then some appropriate and infallible means of submitting it to control." Merton is aware of the great danger he faces in speaking in a culture of technology of the free gift of human experience. The contemplative ascesis is certainly a disciplined art, but its discipline is not a technique or an attempt to control or reduce or project a self. The fictitious character occupied in very active self-impersonation uses the cover of authenticity or uniqueness, or the other good one, reflection, to keep away the reality of incompletion, of dependence, and of the mystery of the gift of human being. The technical eye may cultivate the contemplative look that seems appropriate to him or her, and that fashionably she or he likes to see in him or herself. And the fact that his busy, narcissistic turn is turned within and feeds upon itself in stillness and secret love will make him or her believe that his or her experience of themselves is an experience of God. But this eye of projects, technical expertise, efficient prayers, and long phylacteries makes the otherness and relational touch of inner and outer experience into a series of manipulable objects. This is the eye of a gaze that monitors, scans, and digitally renders, but never touches the face of the other within the self or in the relational world. This is not the true self that comes as a gift in the dark night. The myth of the culture of technology is precisely this. The world is made up of data, the manufacture, manipulation, and consumption of objects that only accidentally have a relationship to each other. The relational order, as secondary, can be infinitely manipulated and rendered by technical processes. Everything can be mapped, calculated, and displayed as bits of information while being infinitely plastic. The technostic creed holds the greater technical proficiency at storing and manipulating data is equivalent to human enlightenment and progress. It promotes the universal myth that technology infallibly makes everything in every way better for everybody. Vodka would be better. By contrast, the true self, the self given as a divine gift, is a dark shadow that none of the obtrusive light of technique can illumine. The ascesis, the discipline of this dark self, is one of preparation for surprise and not against it, openness to wonder and not fabrication of complex devices, and hospitality to the other as a relational and substantive fact. The other and the true self cannot be manipulated because they remain beyond analysis. They are the dark gift of unknowing. Merton's contemplative life was a challenge to all attempts to control or reduce the self, the other, and creation to essential properties that are objects for our manipulation and for the manipulation of our devices. The true nature of self and of creation is not as object, but as experienced other. Contemplation and inner solitude are the ascesis for Merton of a hospitality to this other. This is a stripping away of all social constructions and technical projections, unencumbered by technique and manufactured desires. The contemplative comes to a presence that eludes all technique by an absence of possession. The joy of being embraced by this absence is the joy of being free of all need in the presence of the inestimable favor of reminding us of our true capacity for maturity, liberty, and peace. We suffer all the needs that society demands we suffer, because if we do not have these needs, we lose our usefulness in society. And that is the usefulness, as Merton writes, of suckers. We fear to be alone and to be ourselves, and so to remind others of the truth that is in them. The culture of technology is one that defines humanity according to an endless and plastic set of expectations that it creates and then seeks to satisfy. By satisfying only expectations, the culture of technology brackets, ignores, or attempts to factor in as a piece of data the face of the other. The technical device, unlike the simple tools, does not remind the user of the limit and relational realities of human life. Rather, the technical device locks the user into an ever-expanding consumption of improved technical devices and processes and convinces the user of the never-ending need of more technical devices and processes to solve the problems created by the earlier generation of technical devices and processes. The sucker is us, as Merton describes. By trying to find a final solution, does that ring some bells? A final solution to human contingency and dependence on others is caught in an ever-expanding complexity of devices that evade the fact, the reality of our human interdependence and our rootedness in the gift of life. By contrast, the use of focal practice, this is a term by Albert Borgen, and the book is probably in your bookstore. Go out and buy it now, and we'll meet in another half hour after you've read the book. But Borgen needs to be read. But Borgen gives you this concept of a focal practice over against a device-oriented orientation. A focal practice or a focal thing, tools, art pieces, icons, they do not hide the limitations or the complexity and mysterious relational webbing that touches and supports both the inner and outer life. Craft and tool, the artful work of hands and minds, can awaken the self to the commonwealth of God's creation. In Borgman's observations about the true self and Merton's observations about the true self, contemplation and technology, Merton does not clarify the distinction between focal practice, tools, craft, and the culture of technology. The mythology of the one-eyed giant is a story of the reduction of religion and science to technical processes. It is also the history of the social construction and economic manufacturing of desire. Merton often suggests that technology is merely the making of more sophisticated tools, or that science is equivalent to technology. But technology is a culture with a mythos, a myth, an artificial ethos, and a utilitarian ethics. By contrast, science, from its origin in Greek and classical thought, was an aesthesis, an artful discipline attempting to give understanding to the patterns of the natural order. Science of this sort increases wonder, while the culture of technology increases self-deception. The culture of technology is the cult of a Gnostic belief in a technique for abstracting the logos, meaning, and ascending by the force of will from the sarx, the flesh, contingent reality. Craft as focal practice, the thoughtful engagement of hands in the fashioning of a thing or working the soil, a thing of beauty and inner and outer clarity, like my example is the Shaker furniture that Merton so admired, is an icon of the mysteries of creation. Craft, David, this is dangerous. Craft is the word becoming flesh. Craft is the word becoming flesh. While the potlatch is not John's Gospel or the contemplative prayer of Merton, it is an affirmation of the Spirit as gift in flesh, of the impossibility of severing the mystery of unity in the gift without self-deception. The focal practices and tools of the contemplative Trappist and the tools and practices of the potlatch society give clarity and cut through deception. Such examples may give a clearer understanding of the place of tools and practices that open the self to the relational depth of the sacred's presence in creation. Such a clarity of distinctions between tool, focal practice, and technological processes and devices is not to give in to the reductive, but to offer an insight into the gift in a time, I use the expression, of technological barbarism. God, I set off an alarm. The use and crafting of tools and the quantitative disciplines were intended to fit and find the place of humanity within the created order. The whole was crafted as an implement fitting the hand to work the soil. And while removing weeds from the farmer's fields, it was not intended to simplify creation by removing the weed from the face of the earth. The aesthesis of science was intended to open the eye from single vision to dimensions beyond sight. Science is practiced by an Albert Einstein or a Barbara McClintock, begins and ends in wonder at a pattern that engages the self. The monastic orders of the day were intended as a way of opening the self from delusion to the gift of being. Through a disciplined yet graceful movement of tools and practices of contemplative awareness, fitting labor and practiced observation, insight comes of a relational pattern and a holy presence beyond the capacities of these disciplines to describe.